Hi, Aunt Sophie.
Hey. Hi, Mom. I'm back in my shed.
I missed the shed. I did. I miss tagging Tough Shed in hopes of a corporate sponsorship.
I thought of it this morning. I mean, with so many followers and listeners, I don't know what they're waiting on. Also, I'm a high level influencer, so.
Yeah.
Known for my DIY.
But actually.
Speaking of.
Yeah. Our guest, Jess.
Oh, she is influencing left and right. She's influenced me, like just on a personal basis. So Jess Matos, I've known her for a long time. We worked together at one point, and I mean, words to describe her, the first that comes to mind is spitfire.
Yeah,
and
that's a good one.
Infectious. Although maybe after the pandemic, that doesn't have the best.
In a good way.
In a good way. Infectious in a good way. If you need anyone to rile up a crowd, get the women on the front lines, this is your lady. And she runs an amazing Instagram account, podcast, more to come, called the Tia Chronicles. It's really a love letter to the Tias and aunties in her life. I hope that it's a love letter to herself and who she is as a Tia, because she's incredible.
Yeah, she's just so smart and fun and funny.
What I really love is we're often told the village doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Many parents, Jess just is the epitome of like, no, there is a village. There's a modern day village. It might look different. It might be virtual at times, but like, she's like committed to being part of that village in people's lives. Yeah. And you feel that throughout the interview. And it got me thinking about, hey, do I call on my village enough? Mm-hmm. Because often I think we just don't. It's just not part of how this culture is right now around having children or having a family.
Yeah.
So at the end, there's a bit of a call to action to parents, which I really love and I took to heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we say we're rounding the corner?
Yeah. So this baby is going to drop any day now, which means that we're going to wrap it up for a little while. So we're going to have one more interview after this. Yeah. And then we'll do a little something, maybe just me and Aunt Sophie, and take a little break for everyone to catch up.
We're still open to more feedback.
And more stories.
More stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know some of you are sitting on some stories, so feel free to email us, ourfamiliesourselves@gmail.com. And if you're, you know, feeling a little tired today while you're listening, if you're like, I need a shot of energy, Jess is your person.
Just put repeat? Just repeat. Like listen to it over and over.
Don't listen to it. Do not listen to it double time, though, because Jess is a very fast
You won't catch anything. Yeah.
All right. Thank you all for listening.
Two and a half kids, mom and dad, white picket fence. We grew up thinking we knew what family meant. But as we created our own families and watched our friends do the same,
everything we thought we knew changed.
So we're on a mission to meet every family in America.
Or at least some of them.
And learn, what is family to you?
I'm Anne Sophie Morissette.
I'm Maria Pascarelli. Welcome to Our Families, Ourselves.
So today we're joined by Jess Matos, a creative strategist and comedian from the Bronx, based in Mexico City, who runs an Instagram account, The Tia Chronicles. We are so excited to have Jess on to discuss everyone's favorite family member, the aunt, the Tia, the tante, as we say in French. Welcome, Jess.
Thank you both so much for having me.
Welcome. So thanks excited. For being here.
An honor and a pleasure.
It's amazing to see you, Jess, because we work together. I haven't seen you in so long. And I was thinking back to kind of the inspiration for why we wanted to have you on. And one of my favorite Jess memories, maybe my first, was we were having a party way before we had kids. But we had so many friends who had kids. It was outside. There were so many kids, like under the age of 8. Jess has like corralled maybe a group of 6 or 7 children who have each drawn pictures, and they're having a competition, and she is rating each drawing. And she's like, that is definitely the best teddy bear of all the group. And those are the best pink shoes. And then the kids were like, no, who won? And you would not give in. Yeah. And I had this like, Jess is just like running a preschool at our party. She is the ultimate Tia. Do you remember that?
I remember that fondly because I remember there were dogs, kids, we were drinking. Like,
yes,
oh,
yep.
Core yep. memory unlocked.
Core memory.
That was before the pandemic.
I feel like that's an essence of Tia life. So we brought you on because you are Tia Magic. You run this awesome Instagram called the Tia Chronicles, and I think there's even more to it than just the Instagram. So can you tell us what was your inspiration for starting it?
Absolutely. When it originally started for me, it was like a love letter to my tias, like the women in my life that raised me. Just that essence of like the importance of being a tia and how much I enjoy being an aunt. And then over time, it really morphed into like the comedic tone of like the things that you observe as a tia, the things that you live when you're, you know, in a maternal role, but not the mom, which is a very mm-hmm. interesting space to be in because, you know, there are boundaries, but there also is such an important role that you can play in your kid's life, whether it's chosen family or blood family, and any mix of those in between. Also culturally for me, I'm Dominican from New York. How much like that figure really plays a role in our communities and our cultures mm-hmm. and how it really does take a village. And so that was really kind of like all of those things in the soup pot were what made Tia Chronicles what it is today.
What's the response been like in general from the start to like now, how it's evolved?
I'm overwhelmed by the response, honestly. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned then, Sophie, the Tia Chronicles is an Instagram page. We also have a podcast. Season 2 is dropping this year. I have a newsletter dropping as well. So it's kind of like little by little just morphing into this thing, this bigger and bigger thing. It really validated, for lack of a better word, like how much the Tia voice matters in our communities, in our world. And it's not just kind of like for naught. I remember feeling for a while like I didn't have a space on the internet that felt like it represented me in my family role. Like I wasn't a mom. So of course I would see a lot of mom content because I have a lot of moms in my life, but that doesn't necessarily resonate. Mm-hmm. And then I would see a lot of Tia content from Latinx type audience pages, but I never saw Black Tias, which for me is really important as a Black Dominican. Like I never really saw myself. So to me, the Tia Chronicles was that intersection. I am Latina, but more importantly, I'm Black first and I'm not seeing myself. So how can I have that, those two things kind of coexist? And so mm-hmm. of course, in my head, I'm like, well, people are not going to resonate with this. It's going to feel too niche. It's going to feel unrelatable. And it's actually been the complete opposite. You know, it has really been like just a great response from the universe that, you know, this is worth it. And like that this point of view matters and that it should be talked about and that there's community in this.
I think that's the ultimate creator, right? Is like you see, oh, this doesn't exist in the world. I'm not seeing myself reflected. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing the community. And instead of sitting back and being like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. You're like, well, I'll just create it. I'm going to put myself out there, which is like a big risk too. Congrats on doing that, Jess.
What started the like Tia journey? Because you talk about chosen family and blood family. Did you have biological nieces and nephews first? Or were you just like having friends having kids and like, hey, I'm just going to jump in or all kind of happen at once? Or
it's a mosh posh. So I'd say it really started like in childhood being around Tias that like, if I really did the family tree, it's like, oh wait, actually there's no blood relation. This is like my other aunt's best friend or my mom's best friend, or actually she's really like my cousin, but she's like twice my age. So she is like my tia. So mm-hmm. all of that kind of in combination. Mm-hmm. And then as you know, you gain best friends and all, and they start having kids, it kind of just morphs into that. I have my niece, Sophia, who last year, cause she's growing now, insert real tears, because you know, when you're little, you start to become big humans, right? She helped me art direct like my photo shoot last year.
Wow. And I was
like, you want to come with Titi and like do this thing? And she's like, yeah. So she's like on set with me and she's like, pose like this and look at this thing on TikTok. And like, it's crazy because I remember her when she was like 3 years old and like, you know, walking around and like, you know, just being a 3 year old, right? And also thanks to the internet, that connection of also being the tia who lives far away. And then over time, it's almost like you become those kids like virtual tia. My biological nieces and nephews. So Ellis, who is 5 years old, love him to bits. He's such a ham. And then there's also Lida, who just turned one in last November. So she's like 1.5. And she's just miss being able to be that close to both of them and like the day to day moments. But whenever I see them, it's like fun tia, right? Since I'm not around in the same way, I'm like, yeah, let's eat ice cream at 10 a.m. and let's like play Legos or whatever. So they're all my nieces and nephews, but like in a lot of cases, they don't even know each other because they're from different pockets of my life, right? Whether it's chosen family and close friends, my blood biological family. Like I have a goddaughter and a niece that live in the Dominican Republic. So it's so interesting how like I'm tia in like this macro universe of kids. And so it's always great to see life through their eyes, like the things that they're first experiencing and the questions that they ask, and also how freaking smart they are. All that to say, it is a very like interwoven web of humans that are in my life that thankfully make me a Thea. And truly without them, I wouldn't even be able to have the title. So I'm grateful for my blood and chosen family for sure. Mm-hmm.
Did you kind of take on that role when you were younger too? Like, did you have cousins and or family members or siblings or that you kind of started taking care of to some extent at a young age?
That's a great question, Maria. So no, from the perspective of I didn't have a lot of like little kids in my life growing up in that way, at least not in my everyday life. But I remember being in high school and for a really long time, up until probably like my maybe even a year ago, if I'm being honest, I really used to always feel like having kids equaled being stuck. Like it was something that for me was like, absolutely not. Like growing up in the Bronx, having like high school best friends have kids, like, you know, when we're 15, 16 or, you know, having folks even back in the Dominican Republic that we would know that would have kids and me feeling like as a woman to have a kid equals you're stuck because you can't travel, you can't get an education, you can't like move on in life in the same way that sadly, thanks to the patriarchy, a man could very easily be like, yeah, I have these kids, but I'm out and I'm leaving and just life continues, you know?
Right.
And of course, I know that that's not everyone's case. I know that there are a lot of men who are single dads and thriving and all of that. But in my experience, I mostly saw single moms. And so because to me, having kid equaled stuck, it wasn't like a thing where I was like, one day when I have a child, it wasn't something that really felt ingrained in me. It really started to come into play like in my 20s when, again, with close best friends, sorority sisters, people in my family started having kids. It was like, okay, like we got kids. Let's be excited. You know, we're playing the baby shower or the first birthday or yeah, I'll babysit.
I wanted to ask you, Jess, whether you feel a sense of responsibility when you're like, wow, now I'm in these kids' lives. Blood relation or not, what if the relationship with the parents doesn't continue? How have you like kind of made peace with that in your head?
I've made peace with it from a few different places, right? There's the excitement of like, oh, you're going to be a godmother or a Thea or really in this child's life. And I think it's important now at this age, I can acknowledge like the responsibility that that does require. It's not just like matching outfits and we help plan the birthday party and we go to the baptism. Like, sure, that's cool and fun. But like, do you actually see yourself being in this child's life? And then by default, obviously in the adult's life, right? And being able to have open conversations. I didn't always know how to have difficult conversations with even adults that were either my age or older than me, right? Who were having kids and wanted me in their kids' lives around things that maybe I saw that I didn't think were okay or things that had nothing to do with the kid, but things that weren't okay in our relationship and maybe just letting things fizzle and fall by the wayside. And so I've made peace with, look, in hindsight, I probably could have handled a lot of different relationships better in a lot of ways, but I've also made peace with, I'm sure that those kids are thriving, even if I'm not in their lives. It's also, I hate to say it this way, but that can be normal, you know? Because I also think about the Theas in my life. My grandmother passed this January. And so, of course, you know, funerals and weddings when everybody gets together. And I remember seeing people that legit were like, I haven't seen you since you were 7. And I'm like, I'm 36. Like, like what? So I think that's normal, in air quotes. Yeah. As, you know, people move around, priorities change, relationships change. And of course, it's hard. It can feel like, oof, like I need to be in this kid's life. But I think as crass as this may sound, and hopefully you don't get heat on this in the comments, but I also remind myself, like, I am not their parent, right? And I say that from the perspective of also holding a firm boundary of even when I want to like comment on something like, I don't know if that's okay, or I don't know that I would do this. Like, I'm not there with you every single day. You are the one that is actually for real responsible legally and in all of the ways for this child's upbringing. And of course, I'm going to love this child. I'm in this child's life. I'm going to do the best that I can. But it's not always up to me to have an opinion. It helps me keep my own boundaries of like, I'm your Thea, I'm your Titi, I'm your auntie, I love you. And these are your parents and you have to respect them. And you have like all of those things that I think are important when you're in community and, you know, how it takes a village.
You said that word village. That's exactly what I was thinking was, you know, we hear so much, especially in like American culture, of like how the village is gone, like disparate families being far apart, you know, people having kids older, right? But hearing you talk, I'm starting to remember all these women that had an impact on my life, whether it was like teachers or caregivers. It's like you forget that they came in and out and that was totally fine. Like it's different than your parents coming in and out of your life.
For sure.
Yeah. I love too how you know your boundaries because I feel like within mom culture, there are people that don't know their boundaries. You know, I'm in moms groups on Facebook and some are amazing and wonderful and there really is no judgment. Other spaces, I've had to leave spaces immediately because it's like moms attacking moms, you know? And it's like, okay, that's great if that's what you want for your child, but you don't know this child. You don't know this family situation. You don't know what's going on in this home.
I think generationally, I've observed a lot of that shift, even like using my sister Alex as an example, my nephew Ellis. Like, you know, my sister and I are first gen kids, and Ellis is not very clearly not a first gen kid by generation, but also in the way that he's growing up. And I remember very recently having a chat with her, and I was like, yo, I often wonder, and not as a criticism, because I always make it very clear. I'm like, you and Lindsay, my sister-in-law, give him the best life possible. Like, that kid is thriving, and that's all in part to do with you guys, like, for sure. And I said to my sister, I think it was literally this week, it's like, sometimes I do wonder, like, will Ellis have the grit, I'm putting that in air quotes, to navigate this world as an adult Black man? And saying that from the perspective of, I know how we grew up. In the Bronx, taking the bus and the train everywhere, you know, growing up in an apartment, a small apartment at that. Like, we grew up very differently. And while, of course, by no stretch of the imagination, and I'm like, you have to raise him exactly the same way that we were raised in the environment, et cetera. We both acknowledge that, like, a lot of our circumstances are the things that made us the women that we are today, right? And so now navigating that shift in generation where it's not like, you're the first ones, you got to go to school, you got to go to college, you got to do like everything harder. It's like, how do you navigate soft life and maybe softer upbringing while also acknowledging that there are going to be things that systemically you will experience as a Black or non-Black kid of color, or as a kid in a two-mom family, or insert any of the things that are not, in air quotes, the norm, right? How do you navigate that when you haven't been raised in an environment that, like, in your day-to-day, you have to have that armor? So I think it is that shift of, even with our parents, like, just because we used to do it that way doesn't necessarily make it right. And it's okay to want to shift, whether it's traditions or ways of doing things, to your point, Maria, based on what makes sense for your family and your child. And that really is the key, for sure.
So should we talk about the Tias in your life?
That could be its own episode.
I know, we want to hear.
I'm going to focus on two specifically. My tia Antonia, for additional context, the siblings that I refer to as my siblings are actually my first cousins. We were always together, and there was a span of time where I lived with my tia Antonia. Her new nickname is Tata, because when Ellis was very little, instead of saying abuela or grandma, he calls her Tata. So now we all call her Tata. It's hilarious. So... I lived with my aunt from the ages of 13 to 18, so arguably my most formative years. And my aunt, oh my gosh, she's a Capricorn. You know, I'm an astro girly, Aunt Sophie. So she's a Capricorn, New Year's Eve baby. So she was always very, very grounded, very, very logical in some cases, like not necessarily the most lovey-dovey person, but she found her ways to show you love. Like, she loves to cook for people. She'll go to my sister's house and do the laundry. Like, she's very much an acts of service person. That is her jam. She didn't baby me, and not in a way that she was like abusive by any stretch of the imagination, but she really taught me, like, this is how you grab the bull by the horns and you do the things that you need to do, right? Like, you're doing your own laundry, or like just the things that, like, when I got to college and I met kids who didn't know how to do laundry, I was like, really?
Yeah.
And so I love my tia Antonia because she was a single mom. And in the rare instances where I've like daydreamed about being my mom, of being a mom, I've always imagined myself as a single mom, even though I grew up for most of my life in a two-parent household, because of the example that I saw in her. Like, like almost kind of like, she doesn't need anybody. And I'm not saying that that's the healthiest mindset to have, but I saw that she was able to do it. And so it gave me kind of this like, oh, like, worst case scenario, if I ever did get pregnant and I didn't want to be with this bozo or whatever, then I could just raise my kid on my own. Like, that wouldn't be an impossibility. Like she was probably an example of like, it actually doesn't mean that you have to be stuck per se. And what I love the most about her is, oof, now I'm going to start crying. Like how she lives life. Like, at she'll be this year she'll be 65, and she loves to gamble, she loves to travel. Like, she's just very like, live your life. Like, she's just I love her. So that's Tata, my tia Antonia. And then my tia Luisa, may she rest in peace, she is was my grandmother's sister. And my tia Luisa, and I'm happy to send you an image if you would like it. She was one of the first examples for me of like a Black woman, which sounds crazy because everyone in my family is Black. And yet I just remember, like, she was someone that in my family, she wasn't like racially ambiguous. Like, she was a like beautiful Black woman. And she never like dimmed her light in her blackness, but she also, I never remember her ever saying anything like, well, stay out of the sun because you don't want to get too dark, or, oh, you have to like straighten your hair because her curly hair is not good. Or sadly, something very popular in Latino culture is like, oh, like when you're dating someone, like make sure you bring home a white guy to better the race. It's very toxic. So I never remember her saying anything like that. She never made me feel like my blackness was less than. And I really appreciate that. Like it's something that I hold with me, like so dear and so close. And her laugh, oh, she had the best laugh. And she, whenever I would see her, it was like, bendición tía. And, you know, it physically always felt like a hug, but being around her just always was like, oh, like so warm and cozy. And in the pandemic, I had the privilege of interviewing her for a project talking about my family's immigration. And I still have those like videos of me interviewing her. And at that time, she was kind of starting to go through like some dementia. So there were some things she couldn't really remember. But I'm so grateful that I had her in my life growing up. And like just, she was just the epitome of like Black woman joy, which was something that today I take with me. And I remember to have that still. So those are the two that I would say are like top tier, always and forever.
Yeah. And like you're carrying on the legacy. When I see your face, when I hear you, I'm like, okay, I'm awake. What's the world got for me? You know, and you've got that in you. So it's really like, I love hearing about the women who brought that to you, who brought that gift to you.
Thank you. Yes, they are. Honestly, I'm grateful that I grew up in a family of amazing women. And to date, the hardest loss for sure has been the loss of my grandma, who passed in January. And I think when you have those relationships and those connections with strong women in your life, and I say strong, not just in like, be a strong woman, but like women who really, like when I think, like my grandmother was born 1926. She lived through a dictatorship in the Dominican Republic. She lived through natural disasters, childbirth, immigration, tuberculosis. Like there are things that in those moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, like they didn't have, you know, the almond milk for my latte or whatever. I'm like, but, yeah, like perspective, you know what I mean? And I'm very grateful to who she was as a tia, as a grandmother, as a mother. She really just was such an embodiment of things that I hope to continue to be as well, not only for the kids in my life, but in my life in general. So thank you for saying that.
You are bringing back memories for me of my own grandmother. And it's that feeling of like, when you're a kid, you're so confused about who you are. You're so confused about who you're supposed to be. There's so much, you know, chatter, and at every age, I think, but I think especially certain ages when you start to get older, around 10, teens. And at least for me, like these were women that my aunt, my grandmother, who would like not judge me ever. And when they looked me in the eye, I was like, they see me. They know exactly who I am.
To be seen and understood is a beautiful thing. It feels good to have that space and know that like legit you're good. And to also, well, of course, my mom always says, my job as your mom is to worry. I believe that. I'm sure it's in the contract somewhere that you all sign. But it's great that Tata, even though Tata is a mom, because that's another thing for me on Thea Chronicles, like it's not, I'm not team. You can only be in this space if you're childless. So nah. I appreciate so much that while Tata is a mom, she's my tia, and that we get to have that bond. It's really special.
Yeah. Yes. We do have different relationships with our parents than we have with other adults, even the adults that we're really, really, really close to. You know, parents are parents. It's like too close sometimes. Even if someone is sort of helping to raise you, there's still a little bit of separation that provides a different space for you.
For sure.
Part of this podcast is that we have actually really wanted to explore all aspects of family, right? Like people who do and don't have children. And I'm curious also if that's how you identify as like child-free by choice, because I feel like every time we ask someone how they identify, sometimes they're like, it's a different term, right? Which is totally great. Just wondering what you think about it or how you identify within that realm.
Oh, this is such a loaded one, because the Jess of even 4 years ago would have answered this question very differently than the Jess of today. And I'm grateful for being able to have that reflection and just where my mind has shifted. For me, the biggest thing is, as women, we're constantly being policed, right? And the norm is, especially culturally, especially if you're a first gen kid, it's like, well, yeah, you know, you have the opportunity, of course, you get good grades, you go to school, you graduate, you go to, you know, you get a good job. And then eventually, right, the expectation is you get married and you have children. Like that's just what it is. Even if it's like, no, don't have kids at like 17, but now at 36, they're like, wait, so when are you gonna have kids? like now that you did everything by the book, let's tap back into that other thing, right? For me, the biggest thing is folks should stop saying to women that they're going to change their minds. Mm-hmm. Because even if a woman will change her mind, that's not for you to impose on her. And I think that that's it's always like, you say that now, but like, you'll change your mind. Or like, or just wait until you're older. Or just, you know, mm-hmm. time's ticking. Those are the things that I think infuriate, at least for me. It's just like, Elmo on fire emoji. Because mm-hmm. what if I never change my mind, right? Like, don't project that onto me. But this idea that if you don't have children, there's something missing in your life, I think is what's mm-hmm. really unwell. Like, society's not okay. because you cannot have kids and have a full life. Mm-hmm. I often have said to folks that if my grandmother was my age now, I probably just would probably not exist in an alternate universe. Like, I don't know that my grandmother would have even had children if she had the opportunity to not have children. Mm-hmm. If that was even available to her. Right. So this idea that like, if you're childish, you're selfish, or if you're, childish, you're who's going to take care of you when you're older, because that's another very cultural expectation of like, oh, my parents' retirement plan, I'm the retirement plan. And so unfair expectation of like, let me have a human being so I have someone to take care of me. That's not necessarily the way. But again, when you think about communal structures and how the world used to be designed, you actually could have it that way. You know, caretaking, of course, the brunt of that falling on women was available mm-hmm. as an option in the home, because most of the time the woman was working in the home to take care of children and then by default could take care of older people and so on and so on and so on. But as you go into industrialization, you know, the rise of corporate America, continued resources and opportunity for education for women, you opt out of that, you know? And so the communal structure from a perspective of we all live together or really close by starts to wane, right? Because you maybe can't afford to live there anymore, or there's an opportunity that takes you somewhere else and you want to move there. So this idea that being childish is like a form of rebellion, I think that's the thing that pisses women off a lot. Because again, if I said what I said, I don't want kids, it's not me just not doing it to like spite society. It's like, no, I genuinely do not want to have children. You know, I at this current stage today don't have children. I did go earlier this year through a round of freezing my eggs, or attempting to, I should say, because nothing was viable. And I remember at that time feeling so like frustrated with myself, because I felt like, you talk this big fucking game about no, not gonna have kids, and then here you are like, let me go freeze my eggs, right? And then when nothing came of it, oh, I was like a mess. My body failed me, or this is karma. I went through all of those feelings. And then I said, you know what? Take a deep breath, chill the F out. you tried it. It didn't work out this time. Give yourself a minute. If you want to try again, you can. And if that second time works out, like, or whatever it is, like, these are your choices that you can make. But I remember going through like that very big, like, psychological warfare of like, if my stance has always been, I'm not going to have kids, or I don't want to have kids, I look like such a hypocrite now freezing my eggs. So then also it felt like this deep, dark secret. Like, ooh, I can't tell anybody. And then on top of that, it was like, let me not tell anybody because I don't want it to bring bad luck. Or what if I tell too many people? It was so effed up in my head, mind for real. Such a mind fuck. And what I will say is, like, for any women listening, at any point you are allowed to change your mind, and it's also okay that you know that you're never going to change your mind. Like, both things can be true. And I'm also clear that if you change your mind and biologically you cannot, you know, house human life in your womb, there are a lot of other ways to be a mother. There are other ways to be maternal without having to opt into the, nope, you gotta get knocked up, be pregnant, push the baby out. It doesn't have to just be or look like one way. And like you all always talk about, family takes a lot of different shapes and forms. Mm-hmm. You could be a bonus mom, right? Like, maybe that ends up being in your future. So my message really is like, it's okay if you want to change your mind. It's okay if you know that you'll never change your mind. And fuck what everybody else has to say.
Mic drop. But thank you for sharing that, Jess, about your ex, because I could really see that being a mind fuck of like, I've committed to this way of life. I've even like branded it in a way. There's so many more layers to this, and it's all about the definitions that societies have fucking put on women. Mm-hmm. And you going through that and being like you said, you can hold two truths. Mm-hmm. I embraced Tia life. And I tried to freeze my eggs, and I might try again, and that's okay.
There's a stigma for everything for women.
Women can't do anything
right. You know, no matter what you do.
What's the point?
No matter what you do, someone, you know, some man or some other woman is going to be like, oh, that's what you did? Well, you're not really this or you're not really that, right? Yep. It's just, it's so fucked up.
Maybe we should start a new term and make it go viral, which is with child by choice. Because let me tell you, why is the default that you're going to have children?
I love that you said with child by choice. The very true reality, too, is in 2024, there are a lot of women who are moms that didn't have a choice, whether it's, you know, you weren't able to have access to an abortion. Yep. Or you are in a society where that's expected of you and you have to. There are a lot of women who maybe would make different choices. And not to say that maybe they would never be moms, but maybe they didn't want it at this phase, or maybe they didn't want it with this partner. With child by choice, that's a privilege to say, I know that I want to be a mom and I'm going to be a mom. And I chose this. This was not imposed onto me by anyone else or by society or by these systems. And I think the real gag is a lot of folks would find, if we did a survey, that percentage of mom by choice might not be as high as people think, because the internet will fool you.
We talked about that.
You know, so yes.
I think that's parents across the board. I mean, I think there are people who are coerced or pushed or tricked or, you know, there are so many people who become parents who it's like, oh, this is not the right time, or this is not what I wanted, but I'm going to go with it, you know. And it's so complicated.
Can I ask you guys a question? As a woman who is child-free, I often hear, like, you'll know when you're ready, right? And then you also hear the things of, like, you'll never know. You're just going to, you know, shoot your shot and jump out the window and see where you land. But I'm putting this in air quotes because maybe there was never a defining moment. But what for you all was the, like, I'm going to be a mom? Like, yeah.
There are kind of two sides to that. One, I always wanted to be a mom. Played with my baby dolls until I was like 13. No joke. I had 13 Cabbage Patch Kids, and I would still sometimes change their clothes and like put them in their little cradle when I was like 13 years old, which, committed. And I love being around kids and babies. I started babysitting when I was like still a baby, and I always worked with kids. But I also, I feel like my husband and I were naturally just late bloomers. I feel like I got a lot of, sort of like covert pressure from my family, but was able to always just sort of push it off in a way because I just didn't talk about it with them. Like, I knew that I wanted to do it. I knew that I would do it at some point, but I was acting at the time. I went back to grad school, you know, and my husband is also a late bloomer. So by the time I was like at a point where I was like, okay, I feel like we need to like get the show on the road here, you know? And he like, oh, okay.
He's like, oh, so you know, we're doing this.
I remember that. Okay. He wanted to do it, but was also like, oh, it's like really going to happen now. Right. Cause there's like a different reality just because of like literally biology, you know? Yeah, I don't even mean 100%. Biological clock. I mean like biology, like who is actually having the baby, you know, in that situation. Yeah. And I knew I always wanted to be pregnant, and I knew, like, you know, all of that. So, yeah. So for me, I think there were definitely challenges in terms of like expectations, and I didn't have my first kid until I was 35. So I was like my first kid, I was a geriatric pregnancy.
I hate that term much, but yes. That's
my husband actually one day in the at the OB's office, like really loud for everyone to hear, was like, well, excuse you for not getting knocked up at 16, you know. Like,
shout out to your husband.
I knew that I would do it somehow, some way, you know. It came down to me, like, I had to say to my husband, like, this is the we need to move forward at this time. Yeah. And it's funny because he said to me, he knew getting into a relationship with me that it was sort of like a non-negotiable, you know,
which is that, like, Maria, you bring up a good point though. That is so key, I think, in relationships. And as someone who is currently single, but open to dating,
we're keeping that in. Drop a link.
It's important. That's important, because if I today met a man that was like, seek a seat. I know that I want to have kids. That might not be the partner for me at this right now, today, right? That might not. I might be a waste of that man's time, right?
He said he knew he wanted that. He just wasn't like grasping any kind of timeline or, you know, like, and that's fine. It was fine because it ended up working out. We never had this particular conversation, but he said to me recently, like, I just sort of knew that if it's something I didn't want, that I should not be in a relationship with you because you would go find that somewhere else.
True.
Your husband sounds like a good dude. He should, you know what, have him teach a class.
He's such like a good course. Dude.
Okay. We were going to do, I mean, from all the serious stuff, we were going to do like a rapid fire.
Okay.
Should I read them?
I think you should read them.
Okay.
Because
do you want
to
time it?
Pull them up. Oh my God. Okay.
I want to
make,
you don't have to stop at 1 minute.
Tell me when to go.
Okay.
You can set a timer. Okay.
Favorite outing with kids?
The park.
When is it time to give the kids back?
Oh, when they start like ready to cry, like they're like antsy, and then, or when I can't understand what they're saying. Yes.
Can't understand. Where's all your disposable income going, you very rich Tia?
Buying, sending them shit that their parents don't even need me to send them, like Legos, monthly subscriptions to like little passports, and then food, like whenever we're together, let's go eat. So yes, that's
all. Okay. Where's it going for you?
Oh, for me? Oh, food, subscriptions that I probably don't need.
Legos.
Okay. Retirement.
What is Tia's dream vacation?
Oh, the beach, without a doubt. The beach, okay. Laying out, someone to bring me drinks. Like, please, yes, that's all I need.
How late can you stay out without regretting it the next morning?
Oh, probably 1 a.m.
Wow. Goals. Why do Tias have more fun?
Oh, because we don't take life as seriously, which is probably not always the best thing. At least the cool Tias don't, right? Because there are some Tias that are not that cool. But when you're the cool Tia, you're like, life is to be lived. Sometimes you got to fuck around and find out. Let's enjoy. So yes, I think that's a big part.
Do you ever sneak treats to the kids?
Absolutely.
Well, yes. What's your go-to to make kiddos feel special?
Oh, my go-to, words of affirmation. I'll send them voice notes or when we're on video. Like, I'm a words of affirmation girly, for sure.
Love it. What's your proudest Tia moment?
Oh, my proudest Tia moment is...
Oh, yeah, we're timed out. It's okay.
But you can answer.
Okay. Keep going.
My proudest Tia moment is when my sister called me and told me that she was talking to Ellis. And this is a really hard question to answer, but this is the one that like immediately popped up. She was talking to Ellis and she goes, bring that over here. She said something like that. He goes, Mom, you sound just like Titi Jess. And that for me was like, oh.
I've been printed on his brain.
Legit.
Love it. What is your one-liner to the Tia haters?
Don't hate me because you ate me. Because he and Tia has a good time. Okay?
And can you already did this, but can a Tia give us parents some hope?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so hope from Tia. These kids are going to end up in therapy anyway, so chill out. You're doing the best that you can with what you have, and don't be afraid to tap into your village. The internet will tell you that moms, dads, you got to do it all on your own, and you got to make the craftiest thing, and you got to build all the... Tap into your crafty Tias, your... logistical Tias who organize, your Tias who love to sit down and do homework, your Tias who play instruments, whatever it is, tap into your village, whether they are physically close to you or virtually, so that you really don't have to do it alone, because that also sounds like not a fun time.
I love it. Thank you.
This is good. Oh my gosh.
We got one last question. Okay. Maria, you want to ask it?
Yeah. Yeah. So this question we ask everyone is, how do you define family, your family or family in general?
This probably is going to make me cry again. I define family to me legit feels, I know I said this earlier about my Tia Luisa, but it feels like a hug. Like it feels safe physically in my body. I don't feel tense when I'm with family. Sure, there are some family members that you're like, oh, whatever. But family that I'm like, I can't wait to see you. I love being with you. It's like, I feel relaxed in my body. I feel safe to express my thoughts. I feel safe to just sit on the couch and not say anything and not have to be on. We laugh. We have our own tradition. That to me is family. Like to just be able to be and not have to be on in a world and a society where everything has to be performative or on or show us your best self. Family is people I can cry with, for sure. People that I can laugh with. Folks that also can hold me up in the moments where I'm at my lowest and can also hold me accountable when I'm fucking up. That's family, you know? I don't know where I would be without my family, blood and chosen. Like, life would be really lonely, sad, and boring without them. So I'm grateful for who I have, for sure.
I love it. I'm just so glad we got your perspective. I knew you would bring it, and you bring so much.
I really appreciate you allowing me to, like, be part of this space and the work that you're doing. We need more of this in the world. So shout out to y'all, for real.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Our theme music is by Brian Canning, and we'd like to thank Mark Jackson for production assistance.
Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Our Families Ourselves.
If you have a story you want to share, shoot us an email at ourfamiliesourselves@gmail.com.
See you next time.